Welcome back to the week four edition of the Big Sky Podcast Network Power Rankings. I'm your host, Brian Marceau. Show's brought to you by Tubbs at the Club. Tubbs at the Club is always brought to you by Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey. So you guys know the drill. We've officially started conference season, so now we don't have 12 games to go through. We've got six games because all Big Sky teams are playing each other. When we hit each team going 12 through 1 in our slots that are voted on by Big Sky Podcast Network contributors, Big Sky Conference beat reporters, and just other people we know who are knowledgeable about the entire Big Sky Conference, when we go through the teams 12 through 1, we're going to be just talking about the individual team's game. So for our first team we talk about, which is going to be Cal Poly. I'll put the list up in a second. They played Portland State. We're just going to talk about Cal Poly and Cal Poly slot, and we'll talk about Portland State and Portland State slot. But that's how it goes, guys. We don't really spend any time discussing the poll position itself. The point is to go over the individual teams. If you guys join in the comments section, as always, that helps the show, and I love to read through the comments section. Patty Firk saying early today, sheesh. You know what? Patty, I'm probably going to start doing the 1 o'clock recording because that's nap time at my house and it makes it pretty dang easy to go. But with no further delay, guys, like I said, number 12, this is sort of a no-brainer, sort of not. Cal Poly comes in at number 12. And I got to say, man, Cal Poly's breaking my heart. I was really hopeful that this year with Paul Wolf taking over as head coach that Cal Poly would be far enough from their triple option days to be starting to turn the corner, not to be good. No one expected Cal Poly would be good, but to not be atrocious was the hope. And that was a little on the optimistic side. So Cal Poly, they travel to Portland for a matchup with top five Portland State. And it was a bloodbath, guys. I mean, Cal Poly gave up a kick return for a touchdown the very first play of the game. And that was as close as it got, really. I mean, the Mustangs trailed 52-14 at halftime. And, you know, the rest of the way, there's a couple touchdowns total. But look, 59-21 is the final score. And here, I feel like I can adjudicate how I feel right now about maybe the only compelling kind of story now for Cal Poly left over. Because, look, Cal Poly can't run. They absolutely cannot defend any level of football. Against Portland State, they gave up 496 yards, but it was a quite efficient 496 yards that the Mustangs surrendered. In particular, 404 yards on the ground on 47 carries is what the Cal Poly defense yielded. So, look, Cal Poly is going to stop no one. Only way they're going to win games is if they can score a ton of points. And the hope for scoring a ton of points was Sam Heward would be something different, or he'd play, you know, a little closer to the five-star pedigree. Heward already has done that more so than the most recent five-star drop down to the Big Sky, Dylan McCaffrey. But watching the Cal Poly tape, Sam Heward has an arm. He can make some impressive throws, but he really struggles with his judgment in a couple areas. One, he holds on to the ball way too long. Cal Poly's O-line is not that strong. He's going to take some sacks that a guy like Giovanni McCoy on Idaho would not be taking, or a guy like Caden Bennett on Sacramento State, because he can move a little bit, he's not going to be taking. Well, Sam Heward is going to take some sacks. And second, you can see when Sam Heward makes his first mistake, the second, third, and fourth mistakes are going to be just sprinting behind the guy, which, hey, maybe that explains why the guy transferred to Cal Poly. Is he has to get his, for him to become a good Big Sky starting quarterback, never mind a good Power Five quarterback, the guy has to get his head around the position better. That's why I've described him previously as one of the most, if he's not the most talented arm wise in the Big Sky, he's right up there, but he's not going to be the best quarterback. He just makes too many mistakes. Sometimes looks a little bit like a head case. Just bring this up and then I'll move on from Cal Poly. On this game, Sam Heward went out in the second quarter, took a hit to the back of the head, but he'd already thrown a pretty bad pick. He'd already lost a fumble. So the day was starting to cascade. And on the day, Heward was 5 of 12 for 102 yards. Did throw a very nice looking touchdown, but also threw a pretty bad pick. But on the season, Sam Heward has thrown 8 touchdowns and 3 picks. But 6 of those touchdowns came against an NAIA school. So against D1 teams, Heward's thrown 2 touchdowns and 3 picks. I think that's just what we're going to see is we need to forget about the five-star rating for the guy and understand he has arm talent, but he has to learn the position, and Cal Poly is a tough place to learn that position. Moving on to number 11, Northern Colorado, who I'm going to spend less time on Northern Colorado than Cal Poly, because at least with Cal Poly, I felt like there's the Sam Heward story is some intrigue that Big Sky fans are going to want to follow. I don't think there's going to be any intrigue this year out of Northern Colorado whatsoever. I honestly don't see a win on Northern Colorado's schedule. If they lost 35-21 to Idaho State, we're down 21-7 at the end of the first half, then, you know, 14-14 second half, but it doesn't matter. Idaho State, who had previously been winless, the Bengals leave with a win. Northern Colorado still winless. Look at the team stat breakdown. Northern Colorado, look, it was relatively even-ish yards-wise, 365 total yards for Northern Colorado to 429 for Idaho State. But the problem here is Idaho State is a terrible defensive team. Cody Hawkins just doesn't have the talent yet. And if Northern Colorado can't break 400 against Idaho State, they're not going to break 400 against anyone. So like this, Northern Colorado just is going to struggle to score. And they're largely going to struggle to defend on the scoring end. Jacob Sermon, quarterback, goes 22-32 for 123 yards and two picks against Idaho State. Again, Idaho State, one of the least talented defenses Northern Colorado is going to see for the rest of the season. On the ground, Darius Stewart and David Afari were effective for the Bears. Those two, Stewart rushed 14 times for 124 yards and a touchdown. David Afari, 19 rushes for 108 yards and a touchdown. But I just don't think Northern Colorado has the line. I think Jacob Sermon is he looked better last year in comparison to Dylan McCaffrey, but that doesn't mean that as a starter, he's a top, even close to top half of the league quarterback. So in short, Northern Colorado can't defend and they can't score, which means they cannot win. Moving on to number 10. And we have Idaho State. So hey, I get hit the other end of this game. It was very important, I think, for the psyche of Idaho State to pick up this win over Northern Colorado, which, as stated a moment ago, 35-21. In the comment section, to give 1 second more Northern Colorado, Captain 58. Ed Lamb has a tough road to hoe in Greeley. Patrick Furst there, meaning UNC so bad. However, this was a huge win for Idaho State, I believe, because Cody Hawkins is saying the right things in public. He's being real optimistic, being a real Idaho State cheerleader in a positive sense. He's having his team throw the ball a ton. They're at least trying to buy into a version of an identity, which I feel that is a step ahead of where Northern Colorado is able to be talent-wise. Idaho State has some pass catchers who are solid. They've got some quarterbacks who can absolutely spin it. Well, this game, we have starting quarterback Jordan Cook goes 14-23 for 218 yards, one touchdown, and one pick. And Hunter Hayes, who it's weird to think of Hunter Hayes as a backup, because he's not precisely a backup, but he's not precisely the starter either. You're going to see him play each game. Hunter Hayes goes 10-17 for 76 yards and a touchdown rushing. Again, I mean, hey, this is just what Idaho State does. Their leading rusher in terms of attempts is Hunter Hayes, 13 carries for 55 yards and a touchdown. Their leading running back rusher, Aiden Taylor, 8 rushes, 33 yards and a touchdown. That's just not what Idaho State does is rush the football. They pass it. That's who they are. Top receivers for the Bengals: Christian Fredrickson, 7 catches for 108 yards, and Shaden James, 7 receptions for 64 yards and a touchdown. Takeaways here for Idaho State are, look, they have some size at receiver. Christian Fredrickson, the leading receiver on the game, he's a 6'4 junior from Rigby, Idaho. So we have size there. Shaden James, also another guy, if you watch Idaho State, you're going to hear the dude's name called. He doesn't have the size. He's 5'8", sophomore, but dude has 31 catches on the year, 2 touchdowns, 299 yards. So there are some guys to pay attention to. Idaho State still they can't defend. So scoring 35 points is probably the floor of what Idaho State's going to be able to get away with and be competitive in non-Northern Colorado games. The thing to look at here for Idaho State that I think is always going to be worth looking at is, hey, the Bengals were able to force 3 turnovers against the Bears and only threw one pick. That was Jordan Cook. Only one turnover for Idaho State. If Idaho State is going to be able to force turnovers like that, then obviously they're going to be a bit more competitive, but please don't think that this is generalizable against better teams. Northern Colorado is just not strong, but hey, it was a good day for the Bengals. If McLean Westbrook hits the comment section, I will absolutely throw in his observations, but it's a good day for Jungle Land. Idaho State picks up a homecoming win. Don't know how many more wins are on the schedule, but maybe Idaho State is rising above the top three. Maybe Idaho State is the worst, is the best of the bottom three worst in conference. But again, I think 10 is the right spot. I wouldn't pick Idaho State in virtually any other game other than UNC and maybe Cal Poly. Moving on to number 9. Here's where we get our first real surprise. University of Montana Grizzlies at number 9. And the Grizzlies were the shock of this week. And for 2 weeks in a row. If this show gave away an underwhelmer of the week, Montana would have a stranglehold. And hey, Jason Mayer in the comment section bringing up the Idaho State story I failed to bring up. Still hoarding in the corner. Holt Arena upgrades. They have lost one of the whole hoarder corners, which is devastating, but three still remain. So Jason, that's probably the Idaho State update you cared about. Back to Montana, the underwhelmer of the week again. And honestly, the underwhelmer of the conference season. No one saw Montana not just losing, but getting their ass kicked by Northern Arizona in Flagstaff. The Grizz go down 28-14. Now, maybe predicting a closer game, kind of like when Montana barely beat D2 Ferris State last week, 17-10. I think that was more likely to be the pick. But the reason why this comes across as such a surprise is, just last week, Northern Arizona was murdered by Utah Tech team that the week before Montana destroyed Utah Tech by 40 points. But this Grizz team, they just look completely lost. They only scored 14 on the game. So obviously not a ton of offense happening, but the Grizz got all 14 points in the first half. They were shut out in the second half. It was the Grizz trailed 21-14 at halftime. And look, there was no comeback whatsoever. This is Montana just offensively. The Grizz can't do anything right now. I mean, mercifully, they broke 200 yards this week. They didn't do that against Ferris State. But the Grizz, 244 yards against an NAU defense that no one after the first 3 weeks was going to accuse of being anything flirting with strong at all. But this is what Montana is. We knew with Bobby Houck, they're going to be defensive oriented, but the Grizz look like they've taken a step back, especially up front defensively compared to last season. And offensively, look, I don't even care about conference stats at this point of the season. I really don't care about out of conference stats because the unequal scheduling between schools makes comparing stats completely meaningless, especially when you look at teams like Portland State who schedule an NAIA school, or then you look at Montana, who they did no FBS play up games, but they had a pretty weak FCS schedule and then a D2 schedule. I'm going to hit the conference stats just to give you guys a reference point about how ugly it was for Montana this week. That 231 yards of total offense, according to the Big Sky page, according to the box score, Montana was 244, but whatever. Thanks, Big Sky. The 231 or 244, doesn't matter what you pick out of those two. Second worst offensive outing of the week in the Big Sky, and a pretty clear bottom two with a gulf between even the fourth worst offensive showing, and Montana was not playing atop the conference team. So comment section, Jason Mayer, nice second half adjustments, talking about those 0 points for Montana. Try rearranging your coaches again, Jason Mayer. Captain 58, NAU has these games, nearly beat Montana State last year. Look, Captain, you're correct. NAU will, they always have like a game or two against one of the better teams in conference where you're a bit surprised. But I mean, the surprise is supposed to be NAU is competitive and it's a loss or it's a narrow win. Montana was shut out in the second half. Jason Mayer, all the advantages that UM has over many to just shit the bed. And Taylor Cash, couldn't happen to a nicer guy, talking about Bobby Houck. Well, look, the storyline that Jason hit on and Captain hit on is Montana after last season, where they're pretty bad offensively, did not, they more or less rearranged coaches. The defense coordinator retired, so that position did turn over. But then Brent Peace moved from assistant head coach and wide receivers coach to offensive coordinator. And I don't know, man, it certainly isn't an upgrade at this point. So a story now that we need that will follow Montana through this year, Bobby Houck, who is one of the most successful coaches in Big Sky history, is in a contract year. His contract at Montana ends on January 2024. And the Grizz, even though they have three wins and one loss, so look, on paper, not terrible yet, the Grizz look like they're beneficiaries of just an easy opening schedule. Right now, a number nine doesn't seem like a preposterous fit within the Big Sky Conference. If Montana's still receiving top 25 votes, it's because voters do not pay attention whatsoever. So the main issues Montana has, the offensive line looks just atrocious, which, look, Bobby Houck's in his fifth year, on his second stint in Montana. This isn't, you know, Cody Hawkins in year one, where, of course, the Idaho State O-line's terrible. He just took over. This isn't Cal Poly, where the admission standards are rough and the cost of living annihilates potential recruits. No, Houck has been there for 5 years, guys. And Montana just can't, they just have no offense whatsoever. And their defense is not elite enough to have no margin for error. I mean, Sam Vidlak, at least the Grizz tried passing a little bit this game. Sam Vidlak, 23 of 37 for 210 yards, a touchdown and a pick. But I mean, again, the Grizz had 240 some total yards. Leading the way on the ground was Xavier Harris, 7 rushes for 44 yards and a touchdown. The Grizz on the game. Now, look, Sam Vidlak lost them 33 yards with sacks and his rushes, but the Grizz on the game, 24 rushes for 31 yards. It's a catastrophe. So takeaways here. Montana's not looking like a playoff team whatsoever. Do not worry when talking about Montana about the fan expectations. I'm officially done ever referencing the existence of Montana fan expectations here. Montana now looks like a bottom to mid-level Big Sky team. That's just who they are. That's what I'm going to understand them as going forward. And until the Grizz look like they can do anything offensively that's worth noting, dude, write the season off. You know, Keelan White led the Grizzlies in the receiving room, 9 catches for 92 yards. Junior Bergen, 7 catches, 66 yards. Aaron Fonts, 2 catches, 33 yards and a touchdown. So it's not like Montana's talent-free, but the total parts is less than the sum, however you want to phrase that. The Grizz are just it's not a good football team, guys. And I actually think that sucks for the Big Sky. I like when Montana's good and they're a team to look up to want to beat. They're a team to want to beat down as motivating the fan bases. That motivation is still not going to go away, but the Grizz storyline at this point is irrelevant to the rest of the Big Sky. Moving on to number 8, we have Northern Arizona, the team that beat Montana, which it's actually kind of hard to exactly know what to do with Northern Arizona, because other than this game, Northern Arizona's looked essentially like garbage throughout the season. Although, hey, the Lumberjacks did pick up a win. The Lumberjack end of this is Adam DeMonte starts at quarterback, a guy who we hadn't really seen much of on the year. And in post-game interviews, Bobby Houck said just the offense that NAU ran with DeMonte was very different than what he'd seen previously with Kai Milner. But look, maybe we should have seen this because DeMonte took quite a few snaps against Utah Tech the week before, going 22-31 for 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. This week he goes 23-30. For 1 touchdown and 2 picks. So, like, I'm not going to say DeMonte lit the world on fire in his extended run. He's 3 touchdowns and 4 picks. But whatever, it was enough for Northern Arizona to pick up the win. In addition to DeMonte, Devon Starling leads the way on the ground, 19 carries for 67 yards and a touchdown. Chase Belcher adds 12 carries for 54 yards. Leading receiver, Brizai White, 7 catches, 68 yards. Hendricks Johnson, who's been there for 6,000 years, 2 catches, 33 yards, and a touchdown. Then team stat-wise, NAU gains just under 400 yards, and as previously noted, held the Grizz to 244 yards on the game. Turnover margin was even in this game, 2-2. NAU dominates time of possession, 35 minutes, 27 seconds to Montana's 24 minutes, 33 seconds. But I don't know if I should understand this as life out of Northern Arizona. Because, I mean, again, like last week, Northern Arizona looked terrible against Utah Tech. But I guess the glass half full take of NAU right now is, look, NAU scored garbage time points against Utah Tech in the week before. But you could also say, hey, well, yeah, it was garbage time, but they looked stronger in the second half. Then after a stronger second half, NAU pulled off a big win against Montana, which even though we just noted where Montana is, this is a big day for Northern Arizona. No reason to understand NAU in my mind as above the top half of the conference by any means, but NAU had felt like they'd shown no life whatsoever throughout the start of this season. This NAU's had multiple FCS games where they just looked terrible, including against North Dakota, including against Utah Tech. But hey, Lumberjacks got a win. So maybe things are kind of turning around. This is a huge year for Chris Ball. He's like Bobby Houck. He's been at NAU for what, 4 or 5 years. So that this team is his team. If they're going to have life, he needs to show that pretty dang quick. Maybe the second half against Utah Tech was a turning point for NAU. We'll see. In the comment section, we've got Captain58 saying, got to put NAU over Montana after that W, no matter how stinky their dumpster fire is. Yeah, Captain, you're probably right. It's just the win inverse of NAU now has one win. Montana has two wins in D1 play, three wins on the season, but I'm not going to push back. Martin Heemstra, Barney Ball to UM. Seems like they'd vibe with each other. We'll get there. Taylor Cash, the Hawkling would probably do well in Missoula. He means Cody Hawkins in Missoula. Yeah, I agreed, just like Jason Mayer says. Maybe Ball making moves to save his job. How not so much. I mean, question I have is Houck just going to then retire at the end of this year? Because I don't know. It's weird. The marriage between Montana and Houck is weird because Houck has never had what you'd call, until maybe this year, an objectively bad Montana team. He's made the playoffs quite a bit. I mean, last three normal seasons, Montana's made the playoffs and won at least one game. But the trajectory is obviously downward. And look, maybe this is the time the Montana institution says, hey, the answer to us going forward is not the past. But we still have, look, we're one third of the way through the season in terms of weeks elapsed, more than a third of the way through for games played for most teams. There's still a lot of football to be played. There's still a lot that could happen. Although Montana has a ton to fix. I don't know how the Grizz could possibly fix enough to be even thinking playoffs at this point. Closing out the comments section, Jason Mayer, UM will believe they can/do attract better than Lil Hawkins. And hey, Jason, I don't think you're wrong. Martin Heemstra, who could coach better, Bobby Houck or the Duster over my left shoulder? Thank you, Martin. Have to bring up the hashtag Duster. Moving on to top five Portland State guys. They're in number seven. I paused because this pains me so much to have to talk about Portland State. Pains me enough that I'm just going to talk about a show sponsor for a second first. Snake River Stampede Canadian Whiskey, guys. One of the best buys in Idaho State liquor stores. Doesn't matter if you're getting the Snake River Stampede at $25.95 a fifth or the Snake River 1915 small batch at $38.95 a fifth. Both add double barrel finishes. The Stampede first fill bourbon, the Oloroso Sherry, the 1915 first fill bourbon, then ex-Canadian whiskey casks. Either, to me, it's the one and two, the best Canadian whiskey buys for sure in Idaho State liquor stores. Which one is one and which one is two just depends on the day. But if you haven't given Snake River a shot for your tailgating, do it this year, guys. Now, top five, Portland State at number seven. Now, the first thing that's important, Portland State needs to not actually get into the top five. I really need this to not happen because the top five Portland State joke only works if Portland State's not very good. And we knew that the first 3 weeks of the season, there's nothing to don't care about Portland State whatsoever. They played two bye games and then they played an NAIA team. So nothing matters. So this is our first glimpse at a game that might mean something for Portland State. And the Vikings beat the hell out of Cal Poly. Like right from the get-go, this game was over right when it kicked off. I mean, the very first play that we have kickoff. And for Portland State, Christian Grubb, returns a kick 99 yards for a touchdown. And like here's what I want to look at with Portland State, because they always have some transfers. It's a little bit hard to gauge who they are. Christian Grubb, good kick returner. Also, you know, little damage on the ground, 8 carries for 21 yards. Not really an impact in the passing game. Leading rusher on the day. And look, the story of this game for Portland State is rushing for 404 yards. That's it. That's how they murdered Cal Poly. Joby Mallory, leading rusher, 11 carries for 119 yards and 2 touchdowns, including a long of 56. Quincy Craig, 11 rushes for 82 yards, including a long of 53. Andrew Van Buren, 6 rushes for 79 yards and a touchdown, including a long of 70. And quarterback Dante Sacheret, 4 rushes for 87 yards and 2 touchdowns, including a long of 51. So if you were keeping track, Portland State had rushing touchdowns of 56 yards, 51 yards, 53 yards, and 70 yards. That's a day. Portland State did not have to pass that much against Cal Poly, only threw 13 times on the game. Sacheret, starting quarterback, threw 8 of 10 for 71 yards and 1 touchdown. My takeaway from this is, at least offensively, look, Portland State is going to probably look to be a run first team. We saw Sacheret last year as a serviceable quarterback, not a great quarterback, not a guy who you want throwing 30, 35 times a game to win. But if he can, you know, put together against better teams than Cal Poly around 200 passing yards and can approach 100 rushing yards, that's part of the Portland State formula to having enough production to keep the game competitive. Defensively, it's hard to know exactly how to bracket this game, because Cal Poly turned the ball over a ton. They were playing with their fourth string quarterback. Bo Kelly, I believe, is his fourth string quarterback, who played after Sam Heward went down. I don't know why that's how far in the depth chart it went for Cal Poly. Could be injury issues, but the majority of this game was against a not even third string quarterback for Cal Poly. So I'm probably going to not take that much away from Portland State defensively, but just say big picture, they looked like a different class of talent than Cal Poly. So Portland State, maybe we were probably too harsh early in the year on Portland State, and I'm just too fatigued talking about their schedule. I'm going to say if Portland State is fair right where they're at right now, right around the middle of the conference. So Portland State gets another week as the official Mendoza line of the Big Sky, where if you can beat Portland State, you might be good. If you lose to Portland State, you're probably not very good. Moving on from the Vikings. Number 6, Weber State. And man, Weber State, they had a statement game of sorts this week, hosting Montana State. So yes, Weber State's hosting Montana State. Everyone's first look at the fully renovated Stewart Stadium. Place looks nice. Weber State did not play to match the looks of the new renovations at Stewart Stadium, losing 40-0 to Montana State. And if you want to discuss what went right for Weber State, I'm going to just end this section. Nothing went right for Weber State. They did not score a single point, as evidenced by the no points. Gained 208 total yards, and the vaunted Weber State defense, or the team that reputationally is strong defensively, surrendered 518 yards to Montana State, and Tommy Mellott did not play. That's a separate issue when we get to Montana State later, but let's say it was at least a partially shorthanded Montana State team, more than doubled up the total yards for Weber State. This was just a murdering, and a murdering at home. The Montana State was even able to kind of pass against Weber. The Wildcats allowed 172 passing yards on 17 attempts. That's, you know, 10 yards per pass. You wouldn't call that stellar. Weber State only turned the ball over once, but if you're going to do a parade of three and outs, some of those are eventually going to be understood as turnovers. We talked before about, I don't think that Weber State has the offensive talent right now to do what head coach Mickey Mental wants. And this game certainly did not prove me wrong. Quarterback Kylan Weiser, 14-29 for 101 yards. Damon Bankston had been leading rusher in the Big Sky, goes 14 rushes for 36 yards, and he was the best rusher for the Wildcats. Really, guys, just nothing going on for Weber. How Weber won the turnover battle Montana State, Weber forced 2 fumbles, but Weber did not recover any. So it was Weber State lost the turnover battle, 1 turnover to 0 turnovers. But yeah, that, look, there's nothing else to take away from this other than similar to what I just said, talking Portland State. This was supposed to be a clash of two of the better playoff type teams in the league. And Weber is not in the top three of the conference. Not close. Not remotely close to top three. We have another top three matchup in the conference to talk about where both teams quitted themselves fine. It's right now, to me, honestly, it's hard to differentiate Weber State and Montana as far as what each team actually is, because they seem so damn close to each other in not being great offensively, being pretty good defensively, but not quite at the elite level that we expected from last season. In the comment section, Patty first, Weber offense is putrid. They need to make a change. Well, they just did have a new head coach, Patty, which of course you know. Like, I don't think Weber across the board has a talent. And I think no team is scared of Kylan Weiser at quarterback. I think no team is scared of the Weber wide receivers right now. So I think a lot of teams are going to gang up on the run against the Wildcats, like Montana State did, and say, hey, Weber beat us through the air. And I don't think Weber can beat any of the better teams through the air. So I think Weber's playoff hopes, this is just one game, of course, guys, but I see this. I don't see how Weber State's going to beat some of the better teams in the conference if this is the level they're going to produce offensively. So rough day for the Wildcats, rough day for the Big Sky. Look, this is another thing that happens at the conference level every year. I'm a victim. I'm not a victim. I perpetrate this a little bit too. Because it's hard to gauge what out-of-conference football means in the Big Sky, it's very easy to early be high on a couple teams where we, after 4 weeks, we find out, yeah, we were just wrong. It was the matchup. So, like, talking about Sam Heward looking good week one. Well, no, Cal Poly's garbage. That was my bad for thinking Cal Poly might be moving out of the dumpster. Weber State, look, they beat Northern Iowa, but I think that, like Patty said in the comment section a couple weeks ago, I think Northern Iowa sucks. So when Weber State doubled them up, 4-6 turnovers and won by 17 points, that's more about Northern Iowa not being very good. And Weber only scoring 34 that game when they 4-6 turnovers. Maybe that's the tea leaf to read, is if Weber's just not going to put up very many points at all, even with a more offensive-minded coach, because he doesn't have the talent he needs right now. These Wildcats are, look, I don't think they're top three in the conference. I think they're better overall than what we saw today. But I wouldn't be shocked if Weber is going to look good against shitty teams. They're going to look good against the okay teams and look awful against the top of the conference. Captain 58, wild how the tiers in the Big Sky are shaking out. Look like Montana State on top, Sac and Idaho next, with everyone who isn't trash just mixed up the middle. You're close. I think there's a little bit more to get to, which we're now going to hit, moving away from Weber State, where we get to talk about our real top five teams, not Portland State top five. After a quick word from Hughes River Expedition. Look, if you are at all interested in any sort of river expedition, you want to see the rapids, you want to take a trip of your life down the Middle Fork of the Salmon, the main Salmon River, no return. You want to go on a special trip to see the Persead meteor shower. You want to go down the Salmon River canyons or the Selway. Contact Colin Hughes at Hughes River Expedition. Doesn't matter if you're a large group, like a corporate kind of retreat, or some sort of team building. It doesn't matter if you're a family who just wants to have the trip of your lifetime that you will be talking about years from now. Get a hold of Colin. He can work either of those situations. 800-262-1882, or check him out at hughesriver.com. And I cannot stress this enough, guys. Rapid trips kick ass. Colin's are the best. Top five, real top five, UC Davis. And look, spoiler alert. Five is Davis, four is Eastern. So we're just going to talk about the same game for a little bit. The Davis end, this was a close game. It was at Davis. The Aggies go down 27-24 to Eastern. Now, pretty rough takeaway here. Lan Larrison, the do-everything running back for Davis, he went down with injury and did not return to the game when he did, which really rough news for Davis, because Lan Larrison was annihilating Eastern Washington on the ground. 22 carries for 255 yards and a touchdown at the time Larrison went down, in addition to 2 catches for 8 yards. Larrison looks like he's probably the best running back in the Big Sky. Idaho dude, farm boy, tough to take down, fast, super versatile. Davis is not losing anything from what graduated last season at running back. They still, I'm not kidding. I think Larson looks like the on paper best running back in the conference. But he goes down. The game itself is close wire to wire. It's 17-17 at half. And then Eastern, at the end of third quarter, Eastern's trailing 20-24. Then Eagles score in the fourth quarter and then block a kick very late in the game to seal the deal. It's a touchdown that won the game for Eastern, came early in the fourth quarter, but the drama did not end in this game until a late blocked kick from UC Davis. In the comments section, Patty Frerichs, it didn't look good, had a big knee brace on the sideline, talking about Lan Larrison when he went down. Look, what I watched in the Eastern game, or the Davis game, we'll talk about the Davis end, these teams were pretty evenly matched. This is not like some of the games we referenced earlier where we saw a different class of talent. The Aggies look good, and Eastern look good as well. The Aggies, weirdly, not quite as effective passing the ball this year as they were last season. Miles Hastings goes 24-32 for 163 yards, two touchdowns and two picks. The commentators early were talking about how, and these are UC Davis commentators with a background on the Aggies, talking about how there are times where Miles Hastings can really get into staring down his receivers. That's where he starts to have his issues. But Hastings on paper was either the top or second best returning quarterback from last season. Has been not terrible this year, but just slightly disappointing compared to what you'd expect based off last year's production. That's something that could be righted. But look, on the season, what I'm talking about as his overall passing breakdown in yards per game, this counts OOC, so throw it out a little bit, but Miles Hastings is averaging 180 yards per game through the air. That's numbers similar to, it's less than Jordan Cook at Idaho State, who does throw a ton, but Jordan Cook doesn't play the whole game. So passing reps are relatively similar. That puts Hastings as the number six overall in total passing yards quarterback on the season. I think Hastings he's thrown five picks, which is a shocking number for a guy like Hastings to have thrown this year. But look, the Aggies look like they want to be a run the ball first or just barely run the ball first kind of team. But they're overall, they're still strong on the offensive and defensive line. Both Davis and Eastern are teams that can score the ball. And this game, both teams were under 30 points. So look, this was each team taking some heavyweight shots from each other. Davis just came out on the short end at home. Davis has now played in three close FCS games on the season. I don't know what to take away from that in a negative sense, other than to say, I think it's just fair to say Davis has not asserted themselves in the top three of the conference. They're clearly they're reasonably above all the other teams below. If I were to use the power rankings strictly as my metric for picking, I would easily pick Davis above every single team below Davis right now and pretty easily not pick them in a head-to-head matchup with any team above them right now. That will change if Miles Hastings can find his 2022 form and throw fewer picks, because the dude was pretty accurate last season. Now talking about the Eastern end of this game. It's like I said, number four team is Eastern Washington. This was a huge game for the Eagles, who now sit at 2-2 overall with two FCS wins. Playoff hopes are absolutely alive. And the Eastern have a murderer's row first half of the season, which does not get easier next week, but things soften up in the second half of the season. So look, the Eagles, they have the two wins they needed, and the two wins that listener Kyler Neal of FCS Fans Nation told us they were going to pick up early. Patty first saying Eastern made a lot of mistakes too. Yeah, Patty, you're right. But look, talk about the Eastern end. Kiko Vesperis is looking a little bit better to me every single week. I don't mean this as a put down. Vesperis right now looks kind of like a JV Eric Berrier, in that he's got a strong arm. He can hurt you on the ground. He can hurt you through the air. He has lapses in accuracy for sure. And like any first-year starter, he's got a learning curve that he's working through. But Vesperis was integral to this win, 22-31 for 208 yards through the air. Also rushed six times for 33 yards. Eastern was led on the ground by Justice Jackson, 13 carries for 62 yards and one touchdown. Michael Wortham's kind of a fun guy to watch. He's the backup quarterback, but his packages are more wildcat. He also returns kicks. He runs the ball a little bit. Three rushes for 12 yards and a touchdown. The receiving room, Weber just looks strong in the receiving room, guys. Not Idaho Vandal strong, but maybe second best in the conference talent-wise. Roger Mason the third had 4 catches for 63 yards. Efton Chisholm the third, 4 catches for 41 yards. Anthony Snell, 3 catches. But if you break down all the 22 catches that Kiko Vesperis threw, we have a total of 7 guys who caught between 4 catches and 2 catches. So Eastern certainly spreading the ball out. Now, the part that I think is the biggest change is defensively. Like, even though the Eastern gave up 435 yards, and as referenced, 255 yards on the ground to Land Larrison. Land Larrison's good. He's going to beat up on a lot of Big Sky teams. He's going to beat up on some good Big Sky teams. But the Eagles do look a little bit vulnerable to stronger ground games, which lots of non-elite teams are. But through the air, Eastern was, like I told you, they picked off 2 Miles Hastings passes, made the guy look relatively like a mid-level-ish Big Sky QB. Eastern certainly looks better in the secondary than last season. They're a bit more physical against the rush, but I think you certainly call the relative weakness of the Eastern defense. Patty, let me know if I'm wrong here. Eastern's better in the secondary than they are against defending the rush at this point, or at the very least against UC Davis. That's absolutely what they looked like. But the Eagles, weird to say the Eagles were outgained by 120-ish yards. Eagles only gained 319 yards on the day, still come away with the win. Turnovers were what really lost this game for Davis. Davis with 3 turnovers, Eastern Washington with none. So, you know, if you're a Davis fan, you're probably pissed about that and saying you should have come away with this game that you gave away. If you're an Eastern fan, you're saying, hey, team's getting better each week. They lost 2 weeks of practice early. We know this team is not – Eastern's not going to win the Big Sky Conference, but the team's coming together. Aaron Best is putting forth a pretty dang good effort to resurrect faith within the fan base to head coach Aaron Best. So things moving in the right direction at the very least for Eastern Washington. You know, as I called Montana the underwhelmer of the first 4 games, Eastern Washington to me is the surprise of the first 4 games with how they've – with a very tough schedule, both FBS and FCS. Sitting at 2-2 is a very nice place for Eastern Washington to be. Our number 3 team, and now look, we're in to me, there is a bit of a little gap between 4 and 3, not a ton, but we have Sacramento State at number 3. Hey, Idaho's number 2. So we're talking about the Sacramento State game. Sac State, Idaho, talk about Sac State then first. This was a close game that. Look, the game was in doubt until 1 second of play remained on the clock. Idaho won 36-27 based off of now that 9-point margin had to do with a fumble on the final kick return for Sac State, a desperation fumble that Idaho returned for a touchdown. But don't let that 9-point gap deceive you. This game was in doubt until 1 second remaining from the Sac State end. Caden Bennett, quarterback, goes 15 of 29, 236 yards for 2 touchdowns. On the ground, though, Sac State's got a strong O-line, and they just could not run against Idaho. Marcus Fulcher led the way for Sac State, 10 carries for 44 yards and 1 touchdown. But on the day, Sac State, 29 carries for 69 yards. Just completely shut down on the ground, which has not been the story of Sacramento State throughout this early FCS season. Overall, the Hornets gained a total of 305 yards, gave up 412 to Idaho, and the Hornets led. They won the turnover battle 1-2, but were just annihilated time of possession, 21 minutes to 38 minutes. So there you go. And this is another thing I got to bring up, because I think a 1-point win here for Idaho, 1-point loss for Sacramento State is a little bit glass half full for Sacramento State, because Caden Bennett, junior quarterback, guy who's still learning, he is committed to throwing 4 to 5 pickable passes every single week. He absolutely threw those 4 to 5 passes against Idaho, and Idaho just did not make him pay. If Idaho makes him pay on 1 or 2 of those, this we could be talking about a 2.5 score game or so. That is not in question until the very end. Patty Firk says Idaho dominated, in my opinion. So there were parts, Patty, they did, but it was still a 1-point game it was a tie game. It was a tie game until Idaho kicked a field goal with 1 second remaining on the clock. So it was close wire to wire. Idaho led throughout the entire contest. But I don't think you can look at Sac State from this game and think Sac State played poorly. They certainly looked like a pretty good team. Jason Mayer bringing up the Idaho end. Idaho had bad / timely turnovers and penalties. You guys are right. We'll hit the Idaho end in a moment. But this was the biggest test to me of Sacramento State season, coming off a win over Stanford. And what we saw is, in a top five matchup, we had two teams playing pretty tight football most of the way. And yeah, I do think Idaho should have won by a few more points, but I did not leave thinking Sacramento State's a bad football team. I left thinking that, look, they've scored between 27 to 38 points every single week this year. I think that's what they're going to be offensively, is steady, but just not that explosive. Defensively, they get to the quarterback, man. They sacked Giovanni McCoy 3 times. Sacramento State certainly made Idaho's offensive line look very bad for quite a bit of time. And that Sacramento State's going to be able to do that against other teams. The secondary for Sacramento State, I also think, is surprisingly tough. So look, the Hornets look like a playoff level team. You leave this game thinking Sacramento State is probably going to fall more in the make the playoffs, but not have a bye. Whereas Idaho is, they're certainly playing for a bye. I mean, Sacramento State and Idaho on paper, they're both 3-1, both with a big FBS win on their resume. But in totality, I think that's where we're going to see Sacramento State probably drop a couple more games this year, but finish, above 7 wins. Cause I think Andy Thompson runs a pretty tight ship. They're strong defensively. They're good enough offensively. I just think it was pretty clear Idaho was the overall better team. But both teams absolutely had untimely penalties. If you're Andy Thompson, you're probably pretty pissed about that. Look, the final kickoff Sacramento State had, which allowed a 35-ish yard return plus a 15-yard personal foul penalty, put Idaho right at midfield for a final drive, which Jason Eck milked the way he does, and that just put Sacramento State on ice. So Patty Firk saying, I just hope everyone has fun. Obviously talking about next week, but now we got to talk about the Idaho end of beating Sacramento State. Idaho comes in at number 2 in our Big Sky Podcast Network power ranking. Idaho wins by 9, a game that I think Vandals feel like they probably should have won by 2 touchdowns and not had the same level of suspense. Big takeaways from this game. Look, Idaho outgained Sacramento State 412 yards to 305. Giovanni McCoy really saved Idaho, because Sacramento State was effective at abusing Idaho's O-line and pass protection quite a bit. But McCoy made something out of nothing a ton. Went 15 to 21 for 234 yards, through 2 touchdowns. Anthony Woods also was real effective on the ground, and that's where Idaho's O-line was stronger in the rushing game. Anthony Woods, 24 rushes for 117 yards and 1 touchdown. However, Woods also made a ton of guys miss. That's part of why he performed at the level that he did. Both Anthony Woods and Giovanni McCoy had first team all Big Sky level performances in the game yesterday. Then we also have receiving Hayden Hatton, 7 catches, 72 yards. Therese Traynor, former all Big Sky, 1 catch for 60 yards and a touchdown. Jermaine Jackson, 3 catches, 38 yards. Here's the scary thing if I'm Idaho. Is one, yes, Idaho should have won this game by more. Poorly timed penalties. It's not the total penalty yards of 49 yards lost. It's the plays those penalties wiped away that were murderous for Idaho. But the Vandals are now -2 in turnovers in Big Sky play, losing 2 fumbles this game. But on the season, Idaho is -4. And the Vandals led the Big Sky in turnover margin last season. It's not shocking to see if a team led the conference in turnover margin 1 year, they don't the next year. There is some variability, meaning some luck, involved in what plays are actually turnovers. For example, I just talked about Kane Bennett in this game. Idaho could have picked him off somewhere between 1 and 5 times. The Vandals came away with none of those picks. That's what I mean when there's a little bit of luck involved as well. But we're looking at -4 on the season. And that's not going to matter in most games, because Idaho is very talented. They're strong offensively, strong defensively. They're just they should be a top 5 team. That's who they are, a real top 5, non-top 5 Portland State team. But as far as advancing in the playoffs, as far as games that may influence seeding, Idaho is going to have to get those turnovers under control. And the turnovers are fumbles. Idaho has 3 wide receiver fumbles in the last 2 weeks. That was not an issue for Idaho last season. you have to know Jason Eck wants that taken care of immediately, because it's very hard to dominate time of possession if you're going to turn the ball over. But the other thing too, Idaho did dominate time of possession this game, 38 minutes to 21 minutes, with the two turnovers, with not capitalizing on the turnovers they could have forced out of Sacramento State. So that's what I say. This could have been a much worse game for Sacramento State. The glass half full takeaway, I'd say, is certainly in the Sacramento State end. The glass half empty end for Sacramento State, or the glass half full end for Idaho, is Idaho won this game in spite of a lot of mistakes. Many of the mistakes are preventable. Many of the mistakes that the staff is certainly going to coach the guys through. So if this might have been Sacramento State's best and only shot in, just in terms of development of a team through season, to beat Idaho. Because if these two teams play later, I think there's a chance Idaho is going to clean those mistakes up between now and the end of the year. But overall, Vandals looked very good, had a nice home crowd. Incredible the turnaround Idaho has had in just 2 years under Jason Eck. Weirdly, not that great showing for the Idaho secondary. Gave up a few big pass plays. And some of them were in character. They were not characteristic of the Idaho team we've been watching for quite a while. Marcus Harris, one of the best cornerbacks in the Big Sky, he gave up two big passes. You take away those two big passes that he gave away, that honestly takes away about 100 yards of Caden Bennett's production. We're talking about holding Bennett to sub 50% completion and maybe 136 yards total. So I think that's a pretty big asterisk to hold in this game. In the comments section, Idaho Real Estate, O-line deserves some 100-yard rush, some love, 100-yard rusher, and everyone in the Dome knew Idaho is going to run it on the winning drive, and Sac State couldn't stop the run. Idaho Real Estate, look, you're correct. Idaho's O-line looks better in the run game than in pass protection. Pass protection is what I'm concerned about with Javonte McCoy, where McCoy had to make a lot of plays, where if you substitute Javonte McCoy out for Idaho and say, hey, Miles Hastings is a starter for Idaho, or Sam Heward is a starter for Idaho, the Vandals are going to turn the ball over a little bit more and they're going to have fewer completions. That's not the reality they have, but it's more Javonte McCoy played very well against Sacramento State, executed some very high degree of difficulty plays, which credit to Javonte McCoy, but you have to know the coaching staff wants McCoy to be able to have a few more easier plays to develop, to pick up those types of yards and to not have to rely on beating a rush and then under duress, dropping a dime that no one else can touch. But hey, point taken. Idaho's O-line is certainly not terrible. When we're talking Idaho O-line concerns, we're talking about against very good teams. And Sacramento State is very good at getting to the quarterback. 13 sacks in 4 games. That's what the Hornets do. Last team we're going to talk about, Montana State, still number one. Hard to move Montana State from number one after shutting out Weber State 40-0 without Tommy Mellott. Sean Chambers was at quarterback. And look, Sean Chambers can throw a little bit. He's not a top half of the league passer, but he's not a terrible passer. And Chambers knows how to find the end zone. Hot take. Sean Chambers is probably Big Sky Offensive Player of the Week. Engineered 4 touchdowns between throwing 2 touchdown passes and 2 rushing touchdowns. Chambers goes 8-17 through the air for 172 yards. Also rushed 12 times for 86 yards. Leading rusher for the Bobcats, Julius Davis, 14 carries for 132 yards. Jared White also goes 13 carries for 69 yards and a touchdown on the game. The Bobcats rushed 34 times for 346 yards and 4 touchdowns against a Weber State team that traditionally is strong defensively. And takeaway here, man, looks like the conference championship is going to be decided on October 28th, based off what we've seen so far when Montana State travels to Idaho. The Bobcats, even without quarterback Tommy Mellott and without the additional package that playing Mellott and Chambers gives the Bobcats, they absolutely murdered Weber State, had absolutely no bend in the Bobcat defense. In how I already talked about how Weber State completely shut out, barely gets past 200 yards on the game. The game also could have been worse because of the turnovers that Kylan Weiser absolutely could have thrown against Montana State, but did not. So, man, Montana State number one again, a relatively predictable outing, not in the put down sense. The Bobcats like to run the ball. They rushed 45 times. They passed 17 times. That's a pretty normal-ish looking stat split for Montana State. Question is when Tommy Mellott's going to be back. No idea on a timetable for his return. But look, Idaho and Montana State are very similar in that both teams look very strong on both sides of the ball. Both teams can win games offensively and defensively. The identities are different, where Montana State is unapologetically run first, second, then maybe pass third. But they're inventive at times with play calling. Brent Vegan has built an incredible offensive line where the Bobcats are just not going to have a first-team All-Big Sky running back because so many dudes get to have carries, and that, which lets them minimize potential risk of injury. But I don't know, man. It's hard to it's weird that Montana State seems predictable, but it's not boring. Like that, the Bobcats, maybe of any team in the conference, what I'd say about Montana State is the Bobcats know exactly who they are and are absolutely not concerned about varying up who they are, not in a Bobby Houck sense. I mean this in a positive sense. Montana State passes enough. You know, 17 passes actually feels like maybe more than I might have expected from Montana State. But this is what the Bobcats do. They're talented on both sides of the ball. They certainly have all Big Sky level talent on the defensive side. But man, that O-line, it is very tough to know who's going to be able to stop the offensive line Montana State has, because that's good. That's been built over years, guys. So look, that's our takeaway. Look, Montana State, weird symmetry. No points in the first quarter, no points in the third. Bobcats scored 20 in the second and 20 in the fourth. That's your 40-0 shutout. So Montana State still sitting the top number one. Although, look, voting was pretty dang close. Montana State did not edge Idaho by that much. But hey, that's a wrap on the first week of conference season. Next week, the games we get to look at. And by the way, guys, we're 4 weeks through a 12-week season. We talk about your football team. Your football team plays 11 games. We're already one-third of the way through. This season just sprints. And then it's gone, and we all get to sit and wish it was fall again. Week 5, we've got Weber at Northern Colorado. The game of the week is Idaho at Eastern Washington. Idaho State travel to Missoula. Maybe Montana State gets a rehab game, or Montana gets a rehab game there. Montana State hosts top 5 Portland State, which that's actually a game I think to pay attention to. Because again, like, we don't know that much about Portland State. They played some garbage. And that's where we're at. Jason Mayer reminding me to remind listeners that other show sponsor Tap the Keg is coming on October 13th in Moscow. That's the night before homecoming, October 14th against University of Montana. It's going to be at the Dan O'Brien Track and Field Complex from 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. It's an Oktoberfest-inspired brew fest. You're going to have local and regional beer, ciders, and seltzers, a ton of Oktoberfest-inspired food vendors, live music. Early pricing ends September 25th. It's $25 ahead if you buy before September 25th. Go to go.uidaho.edu/tapthekeg for your tickets. It was an awesome event last year. It's going to kick ass even more this year. Thank you, producer Jason Mayer. Other games to look through this week. UC Davis gets a rehab against Cal Poly, and then Northern Arizona travels to Sacramento State, where Sac State gets a rehab game after dropping at Idaho. So I guess the marquee game is obviously Idaho Eastern. And if you're looking for to pay attention to other than just your team, the storyline of Montana rebounding is intriguing. The storyline of, is Portland State flirting with something kind of okay, maybe, that gets a test at Montana State. And then, I don't know, was Northern Arizona was it their magic that they got to play a not very good Montana team that does not know who it is at all? Or is Northern Arizona actually putting something together? I don't think it's the latter. But we're going to see at Sacramento State. Guys, thanks for joining this week. Support Tubbs the Club, patreon.com/Tubbs the Club to become a member of the #OnlyTubbs Discord. Another way to support the show doesn't cost you a single penny is hit subscribe on YouTube. Once we get to 1,000 subscribers, YouTube has to pay us some amount of money. I don't know what it looks like, but we're trying to get there. So guys, thanks for watching. We'll be back again next week. We're probably going to do this 1 p.m. time as the regular time, because that's the easiest time for me to fit in. It's nap time at my house. And look, I don't care about the NFL. I'm talking Big Sky football in my spare time. I'm watching extra Big Sky games. So that's just where I'm at. So guys, thank you. We're going to see you next week, and we're going to let one of Martin's videos play us out. Until then, go Vandals.